heard the laughter of Chuck Freebie, so I assume he's ready to go.
I'm just waiting to see what the answer was. He wanted some hockey in there. Well, can't have everything, pal. You'll have that in, a month from today or something like that?
I think October 6th is the exhibition game.
My goodness.
Okay, so less than a month from today.
So, yeah, we've got pucks a-flying here very, very soon. And we have...
It's nice that you get to come up for air for 3 weeks.
Yeah, it'll be a nice little time to wind down. But you know what? I love calling Notre Dame hockey, so I'm ready to go. Although November, I don't call a game. But that's a story for another day. But anyway, Chuck, how are you? How are things in the high school football world and the countdown to kickoff world?
Countdown to kickoff world, we are knee-deep in it. In fact, I come to you tonight from the palatial WNDU studios because I've come in tonight to work on my piece, which will be on the Irish offense and trying to get that back on track, or at least to meet the expectations of the Irish fandom.
Ah, okay. Very good. So that's a good place to start our conversation here on WSBT Radio. So I know it's hard with New Mexico being the first game, and no disrespect to New Mexico, but it is going to be one of the weaker defense we would assume that the Irish will face this year, and then you go to Georgia next week. So I asked this question with you basically trying to forget about New Mexico for a second. The concern level of the Irish running game without Javar Armstrong the next month?
I'd say it's pretty good sized. You lost your most explosive weapon. You lost the one guy that you had that you knew you have. And I say that because we don't really know that much about Kyren Williams and his explosiveness. We knew Jafar Armstrong had the kind of speed where he could at least run away from Georgia linebackers and maybe a defensive back. Tony Jones Jr. does not have that.
Right.
Demir Smith didn't show it in the spring, and of course with the sprained toe right now, he doesn't have that. I'm curious to see Kyren Williams, and I'm curious to see how many touches he'll get. I think Eric may have brought it up on last night's show, Darren, where he mentioned the fact that Avery Davis right now has the second most career carries of any of the running backs in that group. That's a scary thought right now if you're Brian Kelly and Chip Long trying to get ready for Georgia in 2 weeks.
The other part of the offense, Chuck, Ian Book, what do you need to see from him Saturday?
I need to see some progression upwards. The arrow is not pointing up on Ian Book, and we talked about this a little bit last week. There's no quarterback in the Kelly era at Notre Dame who in his second year was better than he was in his first. And Ian Book comes out and goes 14 for 23 in his first game of the season. Last year, I think people were giving Brandon Wimbush a little bit of a hall pass after week one, and then they saw the Ball State game and eyes got wide open, and by the fourth game of the season, Brandon Wimbush was on the bench. Now, I'm not saying Ian Book's going to wind up on the bench here by week four. He might turn it around this week, but I think it does bear watching and keeping an eye on.
Chuck Freebie, our guest, the host of WNDU's Countdown to Kickoff. You will see that program Saturday at 1:30 on WNDU, the local South Bend affiliate for NBC. Well, the wide receiving core, you know, Chuck, I'll say this. It's hard to evaluate watching the game on TV. We had listeners saying there just wasn't enough separation. Did Ian Book have a fair shot to deliver the football? Well, there were a couple of throws. Just one, for example, the throw to Fink on fourth down. If it's thrown accurately, it's first down. He could turn it upfield, but he had to go down to the ground to make the catch.
Correct.
And he couldn't pick up the first down. You weren't at the game. Sean and I were not, so it's hard on television to get a fair evaluation. So let me just ask a real general question. Outside of Claypool, who do you feel like are the go-to wide receivers for Ian Book? Maybe now and as the season goes on, does the answer change?
Well, I think the answer does change as the season goes on because I think, obviously, the number two receiver right now is Fink. And then as people get healthy, Book and Komet seem to have a really good connection in the spring, and I would anticipate that would carry on to the fall. And Cole Komet gives you some versatility. He's Notre Dame's best all-around tight end. He's the one tight end who can block, who can catch, and who can stretch a defense. Tommy Tremble had a nice debut catching the football. He did not have a nice debut blocking. A couple of those fourth or third and two situations that Notre Dame found itself coming up short in the running game, a big part of that was the fact that Tommy Tremble didn't get the block done. So that's a concern a little bit, but I would look for Book to develop. And then I think when Michael Young returns, which we were kind of led to believe during the press conference this week, it'll be sooner rather than later, he's another guy that seemed to have a really good connection with Ian Book.
Well, and sooner than later with Komet as well, Brian Kelly was saying. He was talking, he said he played did some 7-on-7 last week, and he's been out there. So what would you do if you're sitting there Saturday morning or Friday, Chuck, with Cole Komet, if it appears he's ready? Would you play him this week as opposed to maybe holding out another week and waiting for Georgia?
I think I'd let him get a little taste of it this week. You don't have to let him be in there for very long, but let him get the first contact out of the way. So, hey, I can use this shoulder and it doesn't break in two. That's a good sign. And I've had a little contact and maybe even throw him the ball once just to give him a little flavor and then get him out of there. But let him have a little taste of it before he goes down to Georgia. Can you imagine having your first game of the season down there between the hedges against a Georgia team with that talent on defense? I think you'd like to ease into the water a little bit instead of diving right into the deep.
You need to write a book with some of your philosophies. I think that would be a really, really good read. Not to say you only read it maybe when you're doing some of your business. Maybe it's outside in the lawn chair, but I think that would be very entertaining reading.
Well, they'd have it available at many institutions, I'm sure. Who wants to wind up at the institution?
All right, so as the game went on against Louisville, the run defense got better early on. Louisville had the advantage as they jumped up 14-7, mainly due to their ability to run the football. We heard Brian Kelly say before the season started, we have to be physical, we have to run it, we have to be able to stop the run. Small sample size, we've seen one game. Do you feel like this is easily fixed, the run defense? Because, again, when they went zone, they actually played a little better. They had the quarterback in their sights, and that slowed down pass from that standpoint. But I know they want to play more pressure defense, so how do you think this all turns out?
No, I think that is one of the easier fixes for Clark Lee. Look, I don't think this Notre Dame team is going to be as good against the run as it was last year because you don't have Jerry Tillery in the middle. Kurt Heinisch is a good player and still developing, but he's not Jerry Tillery. And actually, Jerry Tillery didn't become that run stopper until his final year. The middle linebackers, I'd like to see them become a little more physical. I thought Drew White had a really good game against Louisville. I was pleased with what I saw from him. I think Jack Lamb showed some signs on some plays. But they're young, they're inexperienced, and you have to understand you probably are going to have some mistakes made in the linebacking corps. My question was more, where were those big defensive ends? We did not hear much of the name Khalid Kareem. We didn't hear much of Okora. Dalen Hayes had a good game, and I understand you can shuttle a lot of people in there, but I want to see some of those veteran defensive ends kind of step up and help in the run game. They're going to get a chance this week. New Mexico's got a nice running back by the name of Amari Davis who is probably going to get 20 to 30 touches in the game. So they're going to get their chance against Davis to try to shut him down.
Chuck, as you've kind of sat back and looked maybe at Louisville, we're more than a week since the game was played now, and as you're preparing for this weekend, is there anything maybe that you feel a lot better about regarding Notre Dame than you did after watching it for the first time last week?
No, I think the eye test that I gave him on Monday night kind of was bore out somewhat by the film. The special teams, I still am a little bit shaky on those. I want to see Jay Bramblett have some consistency in the punting game. I thought Dorer was fine in the kicking game. I thought the secondary played fairly well for Notre Dame and really kind of kept Louisville in check. But Louisville's quarterback, despite the last name, not known for the pass. Now, the question is for New Mexico this week, just what quarterback are you going to see? Are you going to see Sharyron Jones? Are you going to see Tavaka Tuioti? Whichever one you see, they've got some quality receivers. Jake Griffin IV and Jordan Kress, guys with some speed. That, I think, will be a little bit better test for this Notre Dame secondary and a kind of nice progression to go from Louisville with a poor passing game to New Mexico with a little bit better passing game, and then you get into Jake from State Prom.
Okay, before I ask my next question, how long have you been married now?
28 years.
Okay, so I know your wife's a big USC fan, so I feel like I can ask this. And after all these years, you can say whatever you want about USC and not get in trouble, right?
Pretty much so, yeah.
Okay, well, good. See, that's a strong relationship right there. So what has been a bigger surprise to you, USC being 2-0 and Slovis carving up Stanford last Saturday, or Michigan's offense sputtering with their new offensive coordinator that – he kind of felt like he was the guy at Alabama, sharing playing calling duties with Mike Locksley, who is just blowing up everything at Maryland there. I mean, they're scoring like 50, 60, 70 points a game. So which has been more surprising, USC looking that good or Michigan kind of so far?
I would say USC looking as good as it has, especially since they went to the backup quarterback. We saw a lot out of JT Daniels, expected a lot out of JT Daniels from the spring going into the fall. Of course, he suffers that severe knee injury. Mm-hmm. Slovis last week looked absolutely incredible. And in fairness, that offensive line gave him time to throw the football. And if you've got time to throw the football with that receiving core, you should look good. And he did. The one thing my wife pointed out in watching the game, and I do take her opinion seriously on USC because she's watched him for a long time, she liked what she saw in the second half from USC, a USC team that didn't show the fatigue and the penalties and the things, the mistakes that they typically have made in the second half. Instead, they were the ones pulling away from Stanford. Now, Michigan struggling on offense, I don't, and maybe you guys understand it, I don't understand the hype behind Shea Patterson. I just have never seen it. He didn't show it last year, and he sure didn't show it last week. Now, I understand he was somewhat banged up, but I believe Lou Holtz once said, if you have two quarterbacks, you have no quarterback, and that's the way the Michigan offense looks right now.
It's not far behind the Harbaugh hype, for that matter. I mean, Shea Patterson.
Well, he hasn't beaten anybody. He
exactly.
He hasn't beaten anybody at Michigan.
Either
he
one
did
of them,
back man. When he was at Stanford, but he hasn't done it now.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, when you don't kick that field goal midway through the fourth quarter and you go for it on fourth down and two, I don't care if you're a Michigan man or not, with his resume right now and his record, you better be careful because those type of decisions could get you fired. But he lucked out. He won the football game. But I was shocked, as aggressive as Harbaugh was, considering that the offense had not been overly stellar consistently throughout the game.
Well, if you're Jeff Mencken, the Army coach, you're really kicking yourself for a couple of pass plays that you called in that game.
Agreed.
Especially the one on third down. You're up 14-7. You called the timeout. I understand you're trying to fool them. You're much better off just going with your bread and butter. And that's easy to say in hindsight. Had the pass worked, we'd all be lauding him. But Army dominated the time of possession and really dominated the line of scrimmage in that football game.
Chuck, of course, this was supposed to be Bob Davies' return to Notre Dame Stadium. We're not going to see him, obviously. You were here for the entirety of his run at Notre Dame, both as a coordinator and head coach. So anything, any stories, any moments, anything that stand out to you, anything you think of when you think of Bob Davies?
Well, I'm going to tell you now.
I mean, that Chuck Freeby knew his football.
It's all about ball. And Sean, I'm going to tell you now. Now, Bob Davies, when my twins were born, this is a true story, he actually started his press conference, his game week press conference, giving a shout-out to my twins being born. So, I mean, I didn't have any problems getting along with Bob, but then again, I wasn't on his staff. So I realized it's different working for somebody than covering somebody. That said, I know he ran into a tremendous amount of frustration. I think he did not realize the vast difference between Notre Dame and Texas A&M, even though he was here for 2 or 3 years before he got the job. Mm-hmm. And once he became the head coach, I think a lot of things came into focus for him that he just wasn't prepared for. I do have to say, I read Pete Sampson's article in The Athletic yesterday about that first coaching staff that Bob Davey put together, and I had forgotten how much talent was on that coaching staff. You had guys like Dan Mullen, Urban Meyer, Steve Adazio, Joker Phillips, who wound up being a head coach for a hot second, Mike Sanford Sr. Then, of course, you had Joe Moore and Greg Madison on that staff. I mean, unbelievable staff.
Interesting. Well, there might not have been enough listening going on at that particular time. All right, we're going to be watching and listening to you, Chuck, on Saturday. WNDU's countdown to kickoff. Remind our listeners what time the show comes on and what they should expect.
1:30 for countdown to kickoff. We've got features on Tony Jones Jr., Sean Crawford. I've got a feature on the Irish offense. Of course, we'll have Sports Beat on the countdown, where Darren comes down and fields idiotic questions that we put together for him. It'll be a wonderful segment. And don't forget, then, coming up, 46 game of the week, Friday night at 11 and Saturday morning at 9. It is Plymouth and Northridge, a couple of teams ranked in the top 10 of Class 4A by the football coaches, and playing in a head knocker, as we like to say, a slobber knocker, in the Northern Lakes Conference. Northridge is 3-0, Plymouth is 2-1, down at the Rock Pile.
And I learned, following Chuck on Twitter, that Riley is 3-0 for the first time since 1997.
That's unbelievable, isn't it? And what a sad story.
Yes.
The young man, the 16-year-old who was gunned down last Friday after the game in the streets of South Bend. And so they're going to wear a sticker on their helmet this week when they play Marion. And it's just a sad situation that's happening way too often in our town.
Without a doubt. And congratulations to Clay, too. Won their first game in, 33 contests?
So. I was there for the end of that game because I happened to be going past Clay Field on my way home from the Marion St. Joe game, and to see that celebration, to see the looks on those kids' faces as they finally got that gorilla off their back and win for the first time in 33 games, that was just, it was so pleasing to see. And obviously the reaction of people to the little bit of video that I splashed on social media was incredible.
Chuck Freebie, he is going to be on the mic for the 46th game of the week and the host of Countdown to Kickoff on WNDU Saturday at 1:30. So I guess I will talk to you Saturday at about 2:15.
Sounds good. Hey, how excited are you to be calling the Midwest League Championship Series?
I am very excited. Absolutely. This is a little different than hockey, with Notre Dame being in the championship game a couple of years ago. It was one and done, so this is a little different animal of a five-game series. So I'm very excited for the first two games, to say the least.
And you had to do a ton of Kendall Graveman research today.
I did, yes. That was, well, I heard about it a few days ago, so I had a little head start, but I put the finishing touches on it today, no doubt about it.
All right, look forward to your call, Mr. Freebie.
Well, you probably will be the one listening. I greatly appreciate that, and I'll talk to you Saturday down on the field.
Sounds good. Sean, don't interrupt so much, okay?
I'll try.
Chuck and I are just kind of visiting. Sorry, like we're sitting at the barbershop. So there you go. All right, that is Chuck Freebie. He joins us every Wednesday during the football season at 6:07, talking Fighting Irish football. Countdown to kickoff on WNDU Saturday at 1:30.